Hello, I'm John Alsop, and welcome to your Internet Marketing 5 a Day. First off, we're going to talk about... So this is a tweet. When deciding, we are irrationally influenced by the first information we find. I did a usability test the other day. And what happened, it was a garden centre website. And the user, when they arrived at a list of rose varieties, read the first description of the first rose, and then used that as the comparison that everything else had to beat. So, now this is all to do with, the short-term memory limit of 7 plus or minus 2. So the idea is that although we might have near infinite long-term memory, our short-term memory, which is where we bring things to that space in order to do comparisons on the fly. So shall I buy this apple or that apple, or buy this car or that car, or shall I go here or there, or shall I have the beef or the chicken? all of those kind of comparisons happen in your short-term memory. And that's limited to 7 items with a range of 2, so between 5 and 9 items typically. So if you want people to make a fairly complex decision on a website, you're going to have to deal with the fact that there are those physical limits to human comprehension and humans' ability to make those comparisons. So, for instance, you might allow people to shortlist things. So as they look through a number of options, you might give them the ability to click to add to a shortlist. If you look on something like iStock.com, I think, which is a photograph site, then the model there is, the light board, which is the photographer's way of getting, originally putting negatives up on a light box, not light board, and looking at the negatives to shortlist, so that they had them all in front of them. So when you're choosing stock photography, you can look through lots and lots of images, and possibly that one, you're adding them to your light box, you're making a short list, and then you'll come back to your light box later and make your final decision. Well, if you're choosing between, say, different models of cars, then you could, and I guess this is only going to work if you're at the Ford or the Vauxhall or the Toyota site, they might offer the ability for you to say, well, compare me this one to that one, and end up with a table that lists the features of both so that you can compare. So that might work with technical products, screens, computers, cameras, that kind of thing. And then in that table you've got the ability to get rid of items so that you're gradually working towards a shortlist. So that kind of facility helps you get over that limit in your head. And if you don't provide that, then what people do is they look at the first one and they compare that with the rest, and they may not read all the rest. So if you're not going to provide that kind of comparison capability, and even if you are, the very first thing they see is what kind of is held in short-term memory and then compared to everything else. So, and also it gives the context as well. So it's all this business about first impressions count. When you come to a website and you see, this is, in this case we were trying to work out, the user was trying to work out whether what they'd landed on was a nursery site, so a company that grows plants for commercial purposes from seed, or a garden centre, which yes does some of that, but is more about a retail experience for consumers. And she was trying to decide which of those businesses she was dealing with as she landed on the website, and she very nearly opted in on the wrong side because of the clues that she saw on the website. So she was creating some context to sit, some shorthand context to sit in her short-term memory, with against which she could compare everything else that she saw. So now I know that you're a Tory, I will, everything else you say comes in that context. Now I know that you're Labour, everything that you say has a context. And this goes back as well to the backstory stuff for branding. Once I know where you're coming from, I've got a context for you. I can evaluate everything else that you say, but against that, if I don't know where you're coming from, if I don't know anything about you, then I don't know whether you're just inventing stuff and making noises that make sense to me or not. So this is really important kind of bit of psychology. And so the first impressions thing, count things, and also if you are showing products and having people look through a set of products, then and this, you know, I've got a client who's resisting the idea of listing the most popular product first. And I've also got a client where the e-commerce package that they are using doesn't allow for ordering by popularity. And this is nonsense. This is absolutely crazy. The first thing people should see, given that they've only just landed on the page, they haven't said yet they're looking for a red rose or a climbing rose or whatever, the first thing they see should surely be, because we don't yet know anything about them, a popular item. Because that way they can kind of go, okay, that looks good, because in general, it's good. That just makes perfect sense. All right. So we are irrationally influenced by the first information we find. So make sure that information is good and pro, what you're trying to get people to do. Okay, so next up is scarcity. If something's scarce, people want it more. And if something's scarce, people want it more urgently. So, and in marketing, people invent scarcity. They create scarcity, and you know, that's fine. There's a slight moral issue with that, but you know, leaving that aside, if there is scarcity, then say so. You know, booking up, tickets going, all of that. Only two left, only one in stock, all of that. Really easy to do. So make sure that you take full advantage of scarcity where it truly exists, at the very least. Next up, there is this thing, content is king, and I think that one's coming up tomorrow, actually. Anyway, you know, the kind of meme, content is king. And also there's a lot of focus on technology. Is it Apple? Is it an iPad? Whatever. But actually the key thing is relationships. So see if you can focus on developing and building relationships. That's really should be your focus. So whether that's relationships with your good clients and trying to build up a better relationship with them, or whether it's with business partners, you know, that should be the focus. next up is now this talks this speaks to the idea of kind of not waking someone up between them making the decision to buy and you actually taking their credit card. It's a fixed action pattern, and this is also to do with habits and mental routines. So what happens is with a habit you get a trigger, and then you run through a routine without thinking about it, and you get the reward at the end. And if the reward at the end, you know, is good as the reward, then the routine is made more powerful and will happen all the stronger next time. So trigger, routine, and reward. And so they call this a fixed action pattern. And just as an example, they talked about, they had an informal experiment perhaps, where people walked up to the photocopying queue and said, "Can I jump the queue? May I get in front of you?" And few people kind of allowed that, but a lot more people allowed it if they said, "May I kind of jump the queue because..." And it didn't matter whether "May I jump the queue because I want to jump the queue," or whether "May I jump the queue because I really need it quickly because my boss is waiting and I'm going to get fired." It didn't matter the strength of the reason. The word "because" triggered the fixed action pattern to let someone in, because you kind of thought, "Well, I don't need to know the reason. All I need to know is that there is a reason." And the word "because" triggered the action. So we are stuffed full of these labor-saving fixed action patterns, and they are triggered by things. And so that is an argument for having, for instance, Twitter logos and Visa logos, that kind of thing, knocking around, because it might kick off a fixed action pattern. But also, what you don't want to do is wake people up when they're going through that pattern. So that's an argument for usability. So using analytics, you can check, for instance, between the moment that somebody chooses to buy something from your website and when they actually have finished buying and they get the confirmation screen, there are usually various steps. There might be the options to do with the product, then we want to know your address and whether you've got an account with us or not, and if sign in or give us your address, and then we want to know your credit card details, and then we want and then we're going to say, you know, there might be a bank check screen as well, a security screen, and then we're going to give you your confirmation. And there might be more steps than that, and you can look through, you can create that as a series in Google Analytics, and you can see at what point people mostly drop off of that process. So that gives you a clue about where you're kind of waking people up in this middle of this fixed action pattern or this habit. If you wake somebody up in that process, then you're likely to lose some sales. So it's about that process being quick and easy for you to actually implement, and also about knowing how to trigger those fixed action patterns in your favour. Then we'll talk about those more in due course. Finally, we'll end with Ralph Nader: "Why shouldn't business be as responsible as an individual is expected to be?" I'll leave you with that, and that's it for today, and we will meet again tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.